Hello, this is Louis Patrone welcoming you to Tuesday Talk with Lou. Okay, if you want to call in and talk with me, by the way, and chat about anything that I'm talking about, I'm happy to hear from you. The number, as you can see on your screen, is 646-478-5731. I repeat, 646-478-5731. Don't hesitate to call. I am happy to hear from you. I start the show every week as I start my weekly television show and my weekly internet show. I open by saying, what a crazy week it has been. There are so many things to talk about, new and exciting things, and I always specify what a crazy week. Well, I want to tell you, my friends, today has been a crazy day. This has been one of the, it's a solitary day, stands all alone, but two big exciting things happened today that I'm going to comment on at the opening here. I did not intend to comment on them. News about these things have developed during the course of today. First thing is, it was announced just in the last few hours by Senator Reid, Majority Leader in the United States Senate, that there will be a vote Thursday, on a portion of the gun bill that's doing with background checks. You will recall, we weren't going to even have a vote because 14 Republican senators said, we are going to filibuster, which meant that there would not be enough votes because they need 60 to bring the matter to a vote. Once they get it open to a vote and they have 60 votes, they only need 51 to pass it. The Republicans said, we're going to bar you, and it's unheard of that 14 senators say they're all going to filibuster. Well, I've got to compliment our president. I knock him sometimes, but he did a brilliant thing here, strategy-wise, public relations-wise, and he's gone out there and he's brought this issue to the public that the issue demands, requires a vote, a stand-up vote, yes or no, up or down, but at least let's have a vote on these gun issues, at least the one on background checks. And why don't the Republicans want it? Because they fear it. They're under the thumb of the NRA. Let's face it. They're under the thumb of the gun manufacturers. No question about it. So the president went to Newtown, Connecticut yesterday, and he brought the parents of those 20 children, 6 years old, who were killed. And he brought together the children of the 6 adult teachers who were killed. And he says, you're entitled to an up and down vote. But the brilliance of his move was not that he went there and talked to them. It was that he brought them back with him on US 1 on the plane to Washington. And today, all day, these people have been beating up on the senators, especially the 14 Republican senators. Give me a stand-up vote. My daughter or my son is entitled to it. My mother or my father is entitled to it. And some of them are starting to relent. And it appears that, therefore, there will be a vote on Thursday. That doesn't mean any part of the gun bill is going to pass. It just means we're going to find out where everybody stands. Maybe it will pass. If it doesn't, at least we had a stand-up vote, which is the American way, the Democratic way. So I think that's exciting. I think that's brilliant. You know what else they did today? Some of the parents of the six-year-olds who were killed, some of the sons and daughters of the teachers who were killed, went on Twitter. They went on Twitter, and they tweeted individually or as a group, these 14 senators, and asked, why is my child not entitled to a stand-up vote? Why isn't my mom or dad not entitled to a stand-up vote? And I got to tell you, act of brilliance, it's working. The Republicans are capitulating. There's going to be, a definite number, so this vote can be had. Whether there's going to be a win or a loss is still to be determined. There will be a vote. It will be done the American way, the Democratic way. But I have to compliment the president on his strategy. As he said, I'm going to the people on this issue 2 or 3 months ago, and I have to compliment, too, the parents, especially of the children involved, that they keep carrying on this fight, and you can't blame them. They lost everything. You lose a child, you lose everything. They lost everything, but they continue that fight. They're in the foxholes, they're in the trenches, and they're gnawing at this issue every day, and they've been gnawing at those legislators in Washington who are opposed to having a vote. God bless them all. I hope we get something out of this. The other thing that came up today that is most interesting has to do with there were stabbings. This is terrible. Normally we have shooting. A Texas community college today, 14 people were wounded. Fortunately, no one died. It's just stab wounds. Someone got there with a knife, went crazy, and stabbed 14 people. What's the significance of this? From my perspective, the significance is this. This is going to give the NRA, this is going to give the gun manufacturers, and this is going to give those senators who are afraid to vote against some sort of gun control another argument. And this argument's going to be, what are you going to do now? Outlaw knives? Are you going to outlaw knives? Because, you see, it isn't just the gun. It could be a knife. The next time it might be a hammer or a sledgehammer. Who knows? Or a pipe. You're going to outlaw those two? But it's a legitimate argument they're going to try to make. You're going to outlaw knives. You want to outlaw guns? Now you want to outlaw knives. We want to control guns, not outlaw them. Control the type of guns. And it's a stupid argument on their part, but I can see this group making it because they made a lot of other stupid arguments, okay? And that's where this is going today. I'll bet you tomorrow. No one said it yet today that someone says, look, you're going to outlaw the knives now? I see it coming. Let's see if I'm correct. Okay, moving on here. Now I'm going to get to crazy week as opposed to crazy day. If you want to chat, by the way, if you want to tell me what your thoughts are, share them with me. Whether you agree or disagree is immaterial, I'm happy to hear from you. The call-in number, my friends, is 646-478-5731. 646-478-5731. You remember the Defense of Marriage Act? This got passed 10 years ago or something. To make sure, we passed this under Bush, I believe, that any marriage had to be, it's a federal law, between a man and a woman. There could not be marriage between two men or two women. It was called the Defense of Marriage Act. It's now before the Supreme Court of the United States. The case has been argued. The briefs have been filed. The court will render a decision probably in June. And it's anticipated that the Defense of Marriage Act is going to go down the tubes, okay? Well, now we've got the Defense of Religion Act. I can't believe what I'm going to tell you. The Defense of Religion Act. The state is North Carolina. North Carolina, a good conservative southern state. We're talking about Rowan, R-O-W-A-N County in North Carolina. The county commission, 4 years. Many, many years, probably more years than anybody can remember, opens every meeting with a prayer. This is a public body. Think about separation of church and state, opening with a prayer. The prayer is a Christian prayer. It's not a Jewish prayer. It's not a Muslim prayer. It's a Christian prayer. Someone has raised the issue there that, you know, this isn't constitutional. You must have separation of church and state. You shouldn't have prayers before a public body like this. And if you do, it better be something that covers everybody, including the atheists. Otherwise, it's unconstitutional. No question. The law is set on this, all right? So North Carolina, the county commission knows they're behind the eight ball. If they go to court on the issue and try to support it, they're going to lose it. So state legislators, the brilliant Republicans primarily, I got to say it again, I'm not anti-Republican, but the brilliant Republicans in North Carolina had decided to pass a state law. You heard me, a state law. A bill has been prepared and is being introduced whereby the state of North Carolina is going to establish its own religion, one religion. This is why people left England. This is why people left Europe in the 17 and early 1800s and the 1600s and came to this country and created this new nation. Because those countries had national religions, one religion. If you didn't belong to that religion, something bad was going to happen to you, so they had to get out. Well, North Carolina, in its divine wisdom, This garden is seeking now to establish its own religion, the Christian religion. And what do you think they're calling it? The bill is called Defense of Religion Act. Sounds like Defense of Marriage Act. I say that this new bill, which is in the process yet, it hasn't been passed, if it is passed, is going to meet the same defeat that I anticipate the Defense of Marriage Act is going to meet, but it isn't going to take 10 or 15 years to do it. It won't take more than several months or a year to do it because it's so flagrantly bad on its face, so flagrantly un-American, so flagrantly unconstitutional. How can a state have its own religion? They're in Florida, they're going to tell us we all have to be Catholics or we all have to be Jews. We all have to be Muslims. You can't do this in this country. And I don't know why people don't understand this. We keep going back today and fighting the battle. Here we're fighting a battle 200 years old instead of like birth control 50, 60 years old. When are we going to stop fighting these battles? And abortion 50, 60 years ago. Why don't our elected leaders, who we put faith and confidence in, or at least at one time we did, fight the battles that have to be fought today on today's issues? We have economic issues. We have job issues. We don't need getting involved in these social issues. Okay, that's the story of North Carolina. I thought it was interesting. I hope you found that interesting. Now this you're going to love. I spoke about this Friday on the television show. I wrote about it for Conklet, my column this week, which happens to come out tomorrow, talks about it also. I called the column Screwed Again. You heard me. I apologize if you find it offensive, but it slams home, it hits home. Screwed Again. What am I talking about? You and I know how expensive drugs are. I'm talking about pharmaceutical drugs. You go to the drugstore, you got a prescription, you get killed. I mean, the cost is astronomical. And for those without insurance, my God, I don't know how they do it. Some of these prescriptions are $300 and $400 for a bottle of pills. These people who are buying these pills are choosing between the pills and food. And in the end, the pills go. They have to eat. At least they stay alive. The pills will help them, but first you got to eat before you can have the pills take some effect on you. Well, I'm going to give you an example now of how the pharmacy companies, the pharmaceutical houses, are screwing the American public. You know there are brand-name drugs and there are generics. Brand-name drugs are those which were invented by a particular drug house, and because it's a new drug and philosophically it's always been said that, well, they put years of research into developing this drug, the brand-name pharmacy or pharmaceutical house or drug house is given a 20-year patent, which means no one else can manufacture that drug for 20 years. Well, generic companies under law, and you know what a generic is, you can go to a drugstore today, my friends. You're going to pay $200 for the brand name, and if now they can sell a generic, that generic will cost you $2 or $3 as opposed to $200. They're selling them both. They're both on the shelf behind the counter. You can either pay $200 or $2 if you want to use the generic. You're going to use the generic. What are you going to do? It's just as good as. That's it. Anyhow, the generics can't start producing the cheaper drug they do because they don't have any research. When the 20-year patent's over, the generic companies just go out, copy the contents of the drug that was being sold at a high price for 20 years, and turn it out for a cheap price. They didn't do anything but copy the content. They didn't have any research. They didn't have any development. They didn't have any major advertising. They had nothing to do. They had no investment in the product, pure profit of $2 a bottle. Now, it just so happens that under the law, if a generic company thinks the brand name company's patent is right to exclusively manufacture a certain drug for 20 years, is defective or faulty in some regard, not all the bases were touched, not all the T's crossed, not all the I's dotted, something's wrong, the generic takes the brand company to court. Many times the generic wins, okay? The generic wins. What happens now? It should be if there's another 9 or 10 years left on the patent, that it's gone and the generic can start producing it at the cheaper price, which I call the $2 a bottle price. It doesn't work that way. And here's why. This is terrible what I'm going to tell you. You're going to be shocked. Now the generic company won. The brand name company and the generic company traditionally sit down together after this type of loss, and this happens all the time, and they negotiate. And the drug company, the brand company, agrees to pay the generic so many dollars per year for so many years if the generic does not produce or manufacture the drug itself. As a practical matter, there is a spray, its name escapes me, Aerongel, something like that. Men use it, they spray it on their chest if they have a testosterone problem. They have an erectile, they can't get an erection. They spray the stuff on their chest after several days. It's supposed to bring more testosterone into their body. They get an erection, they have a happy sex life. Well, the company that's doing it, the brand company, makes $400 million a year at it. That's the profit, $400 million a year. Can you imagine one pill or one procedure drug thing, $400 million a year? A generic company says, hey, you did something wrong in obtaining your patent. The court says, yeah, the generic's right. There was 9 years left on the 20-year patent. The generic is not going to produce that pill though for 9 years. And you know why? They sat down together, the brand name and the generic, they're buddies. They're really buddies in effect. They play golf together all the time. And the brand company said, we will pay you X number of dollars per year, generic company, if you don't produce this pill, and we'll pay you all that money up front. Well, with regard to this testosterone spray stuff, they're making $400 million a year profit, the brand name company. They agreed to pay $42 million a year for 9 years. Every year for 9 years, $42 million to the generic not to produce that testosterone spray. If they're making $400 million a year, they can afford to knock off $40 or $42 million, the brand name company. $360 million profit is just as good as $400 million when you're up in that range. The generic company could never make $42 million a year in any year selling this pill at $2 or $3 a bottle. So they are way ahead of the game by accepting this deal at $42 million a year. It's a win-win for the brand name company. It's a win for the generic company. It screws the American public. That's why I call it screwed again. Well, there is a federal agency that has to oversee these settlements and has to approve them. Finally, the federal agency decided to stand up and do what it's supposed to do. And they have said in this particular case, they don't think the settlement is legal, and they do not think that these settlements have been legal at all, and they have gone to court. They've gone to court. They had the court declare that the brand name and generic company sitting down and making a deal like this is illegal. This case that I'm talking about was argued in the United States Supreme Court the same day, the first day, the same-sex marriage, gay marriage was argued. But because of all the rigmarole, all the noise and publicity about same-sex marriage, which is an important issue, this issue got buried. I have brought it up in the past week. And it's amazing, isn't it? These companies, corporate America works together, whether you're a big company or a little couple company, to screw the American public. I hope they lose. The trouble is, from everything I read on the issue, it's thought that the Supreme Court's going to say these are okay, which is another example that we've got a Supreme Court in this country, and I'm a lawyer, and I'm ashamed to say this, but I think my Supreme Court and your Supreme Court has gone wacky in the last 10 or 12 years, with a lot, 20 years rather, with a lot of decisions it has made. So what can I tell you? But it's out there. We'll pay attention to this. It is very interesting. Now, if you want to chat about any of these things, these are great. This is great stuff to talk about. The number is 646-478-5731. I wonder sometimes why I don't get many calls, and because I've got people who write me. I get some very nasty, controversial. One guy's really nasty, but a couple of guys are nasty. A couple of people are very nasty. I get some nasty emails. you know, to my blog that I read every day, or to something they say on the TV or internet show, or something I write in a column, and they really, boom, they slit my throat. I'm happy to talk to them. Let's put it out on the table. It's like the boat we're going to have Thursday. Let's get it up and down on it. Let's chat together. See where it goes. Anyhow, I respect your position if you call, by the way. I'm not going to beat you up. You're not going to beat me up. But let's talk. Let's see now. What should we talk about now? Oh, we're going to talk about Sharia law. Sharia law. Sharia law, as you are aware, is Muslim law. It is Islamic law. It is the word of the Quran. The Quran is to the Muslims what the Bible is to Christians, and the Torah is to Jews. It is the word of God, the word of Muhammad in this instance. And the Muslim state is that we must follow the Quran. And they follow it very religiously and very strict. This is their religion. This is their right. We don't have to agree with it, though. It's called Sharia law. And the thing that bothers me, before I get into one particular case, is that as the Muslims from the Middle East are moving to the industrial nations, they're immigrating to the industrial nations, to France, to England, to the countries in North Africa, to the United States, they want to come here and they want to bring their laws with them. They don't want to live, for example, under American criminal law or under American civil law. They want to be subject to Sharia law because that's the law of their religion. It's brought to them from Muhammad in the Quran. And nobody seems to worry about this. Very few people worry about it. Some news commentators who I respect very much think that this is a prejudicial position to take if they are against Sharia law in the United States. They're going to bring it. I don't think it is. I don't think these people who say that have done their homework, because it's happened three or four times already in this country. And in two instances, the court followed Sharia law to the detriment of the existing system, and then it was knocked down on appeal each time. But they don't want to live under our law. And I say, if you want to be an American, you've got to live under American law. If you want to live under Islamic law, Sharia law, go back where you came from. Very simple. No one asks you to come here. We want you here. Our doors are open. But if you come to be an American, you must live as an American. That's the way it is, pure and simple. If I move to Saudi Arabia, we exercise American law and criminal and civil? No way! I've got to live under their laws, okay? No kissing in public. They'll put me in jail for 3 months if I had a wife or a girlfriend that kissed them in public. Things like that. It's a crazy world. Now, here's what happened. They got very strict and very harsh laws in the Muslim world. An individual had some sort of an altercation, and he knifed his friend, a male friend, in the back. Severed his spine somehow, and the person who was next turned into a paraplegic. Cannot move for 10 years now from the waist down, will never move from the waist down. There was a trial 10 years ago, and the person who used the knife and caused his friend to become a paraplegic was found guilty. And Sharia law, Muslim law, Islamic law, the Quran is very simple when it comes to things of this nature. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. So if you take someone's eye out, they're going to gouge your eye out. They're going to take their thumb and gouge your eye out. The law is going to do this if you're found guilty, of course. If you steal from somebody, in many instances, the hand that did the stealing cut off. I don't make the rules. Those are the rules. Well, the court decided this 10 years ago, that because he caused this person to become a paraplegic, sentenced to a wheelchair the rest of his life, he must become a paraplegic, and they had ordered him to be surgically, to have him become a paraplegic by undergoing an operation, a surgical procedure, to sever his spine or whatever has to be severed, so he will be a paraplegic the rest of his life. There was an alternative to this, though. If the family, if he or the family could pay for this fellow who was sitting in the wheelchair now, million something reals or whatever they call it over there. It comes to around $270,000 American money. Then he would not have to undergo the surgical procedure and become a paraplegic. And that's now been 10 years. The perpetrator, his family, can't come up with that kind of money. It's beyond them. And the court is now saying, it's 10 years, we gave you long enough, you're going to undergo the surgical procedure. You are going to be a paraplegic. Now, the whole world's in protest. I think every civilized country is written. This is in Saudi Arabia, by the way. Has written to Saudi Arabia. They're our friends. They're a big oil friend. They got Dubai with the big buildings. It's the show place, the play place, the Las Vegas of the Middle East. Are saying, don't do this. It's gory. It's wrong. It's reprehensible. It doesn't make sense. Even the Pope got involved, but the government says we're going to go ahead with this. It hasn't happened yet, but it's out there. And I call this the beauty of Sharia law. It says it all. It says everything. I mean, this is the same type of religion, my friends, where if you're a woman and you commit adultery, very simple. They're going to dig a hole in the ground. They're going to bury you up to your neck. And then your neighbors are going to stone you to death. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? We don't want that here. And I don't know if we have a right to complain if they're doing this in Saudi Arabia. I think we do under the circumstances because we're friends with that country. We buy their oil, okay? We help make them rich over there. They think they're doing us a favor by selling us their oil. I wonder what they're going to do in 20 years when they ain't got any more oil to sell. That's why they built Dubai. Be that as it may, beware of Sharia law. Thanks, we're going to be the big thing today in my talk. I got pushed aside because of all these other issues. Now let me get to banks. I've been talking about banks every week for the last several weeks. A friend of mine told me, and I mentioned this on the TV show this week, and she told me, she said, if you have a gun, you can rob a bank. If you own a bank, you can rob everybody. True. If you have a gun, you can rob a bank. If you own a bank, you can rob everybody. One of the major problems that has become exposed is that how our money is treated when we deposit it. This problem in Cyprus brought it all up where they're grabbing now and taking 60% out of anyone's bank deposits that has in excess of 100,000 euros to pay off a national debt. Isn't that wonderful? They're taking money. If that was you and me over there, they're taking your money and mine to pay the national debt to Germany and the Euro Bank. Well, it made me wonder how this works, and I looked some things up. When we make a deposit in the United States of America in the bank, whether it be in a checking account, in a savings account, a CD, whatever you have, we no longer own that money. You heard me. We don't any longer own it. It doesn't mean we just let somebody else hold it. Title to that money, legal right to that money passes to the bank. Absolutely, and that's a bank can take that money out anytime they want without any BS involved. They don't need an act of the legislature. They don't need anything. Many courts in this country have recognized the right of a bank to grab an account, okay? And I'm saying to you, be aware. I don't know where you're going to keep your money. I don't know where I'm going to keep my money. Any money we deposit in the bank is no longer ours. It belongs legally to the bank. And such being, they can take our money. And we, if they want to pay off somebody's bill or they want to do anything with it, that's their right. Their money, the bank's money, not our money. Isn't that amazing, the things we are learning? Okay, we've had an interesting half hour. We're coming to the end of it very shortly. We've got about 40 seconds left. I thank you for joining me. I know that many of you listen to the show from the archive portion during the week. We had this radio program, Black Talk Radio, being promoted on 8 different sites. So you're seeing it and you're listening to it. We're up over 2,000 people a week listening to the archive portion. I thank you whether you're listening to this portion or the archive portion. I thank